From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made June 4th, 2013. Governor Andrew Cuomo introduced the Women's Equality Act, an agenda that included 10 planks. It was designed to bring about equality in the workplace, equal pay for equal work. It was designed to protect against discrimination, especially the kind that can target women who get pregnant, start families, and still want to advance in the workplace. It targeted human trafficking. And the WEA included a plank that would codify Roe v. Wade on the state level, protecting reproductive rights in New York at a time when more than 20 other states have restricted access to abortion in the last several years. For the past 2 years, Democrats and Republicans have generally agreed on 9 of the 10 planks. They disagreed about codifying Roe v. Wade. Democrats, again, speaking broadly here, have argued that they simply want to protect the status quo. Republicans, again speaking broadly here, have claimed that the secret goal of this legislation would be to expand abortion access, even though the medical community tells us that wouldn't happen. So Democrats in the state assembly declared that they would only vote for the 10 planks as a single package, pass them all or pass nothing. Their fear was that by voting one by one, they would never be able to pass legislation protecting access to safe abortion services. Republicans fired back that if they believed in the 9 other planks, they should be willing to vote on them individually. It had been a stalemate. This week, the stalemate seems to have ended. The state assembly has relented, and it appears that New York lawmakers will pass 9 of the 10 planks, leaving out the codification of Roe v. Wade. State Senator Rich Funke, a newly elected Republican, declared victory this week. He said in a statement, quote, "You and I held strong and would not allow the women's equality agenda to be hijacked by those that would use it as a pretext for expanding abortion." He said that to cheering crowds at the Empire State Plaza Convention Center, and he followed up by saying, quote, "We won." So what next for those who want to protect reproductive rights? And will the other 9 planks be effective in protecting women in the workplace? We're going to try to answer your questions this hour. My guest in studio is Beth Cordello, chair of the Employment Practice Group at Polano & Farrell Law Firm in Rochester. Beth, welcome back. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having me.
On the phone with us is Tracy Brooks, the president of Family Planning Advocates. Tracy, thanks for taking the time.
I'm happy to be here.
We have reached out to both Senator Rich Funke and State Assembly Majority Leader Joe Morelli. Mr. Morelli, to try to get a sense for where things will go in the Assembly. He's not available, nor is Rich Funke. In fact, Mr. Funke's staff has sent over a statement from Rich regarding the situation, and I'll go ahead and read that first. This is from Senator Rich Funke on the Women's Equality Act. Quote, "I extend my thanks to the Assembly for casting partisanship aside to pass a vital plank of the Senate Women's Equality Act, strengthening laws against the devastating crime of human trafficking. That this and several other women's equality measures had been held in limbo for so long was a disservice to all New Yorkers. It is my hope that the Assembly takes quick action to pass the remaining planks of the Senate Women's Equality Act, including equal pay for equal work, so we can finally make our state a fairer place for all women." End quote. That's from Republican State Senator Rich Funke. Tracy, from what we're seeing with this, let me start by asking you, we've heard for the past couple of years, generally speaking from Democrats, that this would be a mistake to pass the points one by one. That's looking like what's going to happen. What do you think?
I think that the Assembly is going to pass all of the provisions of the Women's Equality Agenda. But the one thing I don't want to lose sight of, and especially want to ask Mr. Funke, is if, in fact, the Senate is going to pass the additional 5 pieces of legislation that were passed on the Human Trafficking Day that really give a robust protection around human trafficking for victims, as well as the robust increase of penalties. So what we saw happen on the Human Trafficking Day was not only the Women's Equality Agenda provision, but 5 additional pieces of legislation. And in fact, Mr. Funke believes that women need more protections and actually our laws to keep pace. He is correct, and hopefully we'll see all of those pieces of legislation pass in the Senate. But I feel very confident to let you know that the Women's Equality Agenda, which compiles all of the provisions, certainly not what was passed in the Senate, will move through the Assembly.
Okay. And when it comes to his comment that the Women's Equality Agenda had, quote, been hijacked by those who would use it as a pretext for expanding abortion. Again, I have tried my best to really ascertain with the medical community what happens with reproductive rights if all 10 planks pass, if that codification passes. They have told me that it protects the status quo. But Mr. Funke and a lot of those who have opposed that plank have said that they are fearing that it would expand abortion rights.
They're only fearing where you got information from people who actually know what it is going to do. So what that piece of that provision of the law does is actually establish abortion in the public health law in no way changing the scope of practice, and additionally does include the health exception that we received under Roe versus Wade, which is the law of the land in the United States, which just says if a woman is after 24 weeks pregnant and her health is endangered, that she and her family or whomever she chooses to be part of her decision-making process has the ability to contemplate all medical opportunities and options when deciding how to move forward. The one thing I do want to just make very clear is the women's equality agenda is not hijacked by the reproductive health portion. The women's equality agenda includes the reproductive health portion. So anything that's short of all of the provisions is not the women's equality agenda, although very important pieces of legislation. So Mr. Funke has not been part of passing the women's equality agenda, although I will credit him for passing very important pieces of legislation. But all of the provisions of the women's equality agenda are important to the women in the state of New York and supported by the people in the state of New York. And we've seen that in public polling since the governor even announced this piece of legislation.
Tracy, though, we hear from people who say, look, New York State, abortion is not something that is difficult to get in New York State. Why would we even need this 10th plank?
Well, what we need is in the state of New York, we do have excellent access to health care as compared to the rest of the country. And what we do need to ensure is that regardless of what happens in Washington, and no one can turn a blind eye to the attacks that women's reproductive health care is under, as well as other areas of women's socioeconomic security is under attack in Washington, that the health care that women can access in the state of New York and providers can offer is secured regardless of what happens in Washington, D.C. And what we have left to do and should have done 44 years ago in April when Roe versus Wade was, it's 45 years ago actually, pardon me, no it's not. Roe versus Wade was passed in 1973, so it'll be 43 years this year in when Roe passed and secured the health exception and required states to recognize that. So we're really late to the dance. Although our state was 3 years early in ensuring that women could access safe legal abortion, we did not keep pace with the federal law. So really all we're doing at this point is, you know, bringing the law into compliance with the federal regulation.
All the headlines I've seen and doing my best to talk to legislative staffers this week, Tracy, indicates to me, though, that 9 of the 10 are on track to pass without that codification of Roe v. Wade. Are you hearing anything different?
I am. Did you see yesterday or on Wednesday, A6221 was introduced by Assemblywoman Glick, the reproductive health legislation portion of the women's equality agenda?
Okay, so in other words, you think that the fight's not over yet on that?
Oh, certainly not, because the Assembly would never walk away from the needs of women in the state of New York. And then, in fact, what's really exciting and heartening is to see that not only did they pass the one small portion of the human trafficking protections that the Women's Equality Agenda addressed, they also had 5 additional bills that really make for robust laws in the state of New York.
All right, so before
around human trafficking, I'm sorry, around human trafficking.
Yeah, before I get, and again for our listeners, if you've got questions about any portion of this, because there's a lot at stake here, you can call the program 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. In a moment, I'm going to ask Beth Cordello to help us understand some of the workplace protections that are supposed to be built into this act, because sometimes legislation has real teeth and sometimes it's more for headlines, and we're going to try to distinguish what may be coming here. But Tracy, when it comes to human trafficking, can you help lay out for our audience what you think needs to be done and what it looks like our legislature is appeared poised to do here?
Sure. So you want to hear about the whole package of this?
Sure.
Sure. So there are a number of bills. And the piece that was in the Women's Equality Agenda, what that piece did was increase penalties for sex and labor, human trafficking. It escalated penalties for promoting prostitution or patronizing minors for prostitution. It expanded the Interagency Task Force on Human Trafficking, required anti-human trafficking training for law enforcement, created civil rights of action to enable victims of human trafficking to sue their perpetrators and for damages. And it, and this package that passed the other day in the Assembly also established an affirmative defense in prostitution prosecutions if the defendant was a sex trafficked victim. We also saw in the legislation the establishment of a 24-hour anonymous toll-free hotline. We also saw that the Office of Temporary and Disability Services will make safe, accessible housing available to victims. Some of the other bills that we're looking at train employees for gaming facilities to recognize signs of human trafficking. There's a waiver of DNA data bank fee for persons convicted of an offense and found to be a victim of human trafficking. So really a lot of these you're looking at are robust protections for victims of human trafficking, whereas there are also, you know, some robust penalties put in place as well, but also the ability for the public to help identify and report in an anonymous fashion the belief that human trafficking was occurring. And then if I could, one last thing,
sure.
Not only did the Assembly pass that human trafficking package, but then on the 17th, they went forward and passed the Paid Family Leave Act. Again, another significant piece of legislation that will help economic justice for women across the state of New York and families.
Talking to Tracy Brooks, the president of Family Planning Advocates, how common is human trafficking?
I actually have that information. It is a $32 billion global industry that's estimated more than 17,000 victims are brought to the United States annually.
Okay.
They're held against their will with force into involuntary servitude, debt, bondage, and sex trade, unfortunately.
All right. So if you've got questions about this or comments, and it's interesting, Tracy raising the point that again, I'm looking around at headlines from Huffington Post to Politics on the Hudson. New York Democrats split off abortion provision from women's equality legislation. Updated last night on the Huffington Post, Politics on the Hudson. But Tracy telling us that it's not done yet. And so we're going to try to stay on top of that as best we can. But if you want to weigh in on whether, for example, you as a voter and a listener of this program, do you want to see all 10 points passed together? Should they pass them as Republicans have been saying and Rich Funke helping lead that charge one by one? So if I could, and Tracy, hang on the line because I want to get to more listener comments and questions, but I also want to kick it over to Beth because it is 10 points that we're talking about that the governor introduced 2 years ago that in large part or in total could be passing soon. And when you look at workplace laws against discrimination, for example, I'd like to just quickly go point by point, if we could, Beth, to understand. Achieving pay equity, for example. The bill would aim to shatter the glass ceiling by eliminating the ability of employers to point to any other factor other than sex to justify pay disparities and instead require that their pay decisions be based on legitimate reasons. How common a problem is this for women in the workplace? Is there any way to know, by the way? I mean, there's no way to put a number on it, but how often do you see it?
I see it quite a bit. A lot of women in the workplace feel as though they're not paid similarly to their male colleagues, and a lot of data out there seems to support that. Under New York state law currently, as a defense, New York employers can point to, quote, any factor other than sex to justify disparity in pay. The Women's Equality Act would change that to reflect what federal law requires, where employers have to show some sort of business necessity justification for the difference, for example, training, education, experience, that sort of thing that's related to the position, as opposed to the very broad anything other than sex.
Okay, so it would narrow that scope.
Yes.
Would this have teeth?
Yes, absolutely. It makes it much more difficult. I mean, under the current law, employers can almost say, well, I just like that person better, and that's why. You know, and this really closes that, makes the defenses more difficult. It also provides for treble damages in the event that women are able to prove willful differences in pay, and that's 300% of what their damages are. That is very significant. And it also prohibits employers from prohibiting their employees from discussing wages with one another, because a lot of employers prohibit that. You know, you have to keep your salary information private, and therefore women can't really find out what their male colleagues are making. That practice, by the way, is already prohibited under the National Labor Relations Act. A lot of people aren't aware of that, though.
All right, so hold on a second, because this is important, and we've talked about it in this program before, but this is important. You're saying already employers can't penalize you for talking about what you make with colleagues. Is that true?
That's absolutely
correct. But don't some employers try to penalize you for talking about what you make?
Many employers do, because a lot of, and this is why I think, even though that this is already a right women have, I think by passing that particular provision, it'll make headlines, you know, but it'll also make employees more savvy as to what their rights are.
Okay, so in the first portion alone, what we're seeing are two separate things, but I think they seem to have some value here. One with actual teeth to narrow the reasons employers can pay people differently.
Correct.
Then the second one, reinforcing a law that already exists, but hopefully helping awareness and cut down on employers' willingness to break that law.
Right.
Yes?
And then third, making some serious damages, you know, especially for lower to middle income people. You know, the damages aren't that attractive, so they're going to have a hard time finding a lawyer that'll be willing to take it up. By tripling their damages, that makes a lot more cases look favorable to attorneys to take up and prosecute.
So can you forgive my ignorance as I probe that for
one more
point here? For a typical damage, for example, is this a case where a woman in a workplace finds out she's making $5,000 less than a male counterpart, $10,000 less, and
right.
has been there for 3 years or whatever?
Right.
Typically, would she say the damages would be the difference?
Correct.
And now, let's say it's a $10,000 wage gap or salary gap over 3 years, $30,000, the damages become 90?
That's exactly right.
Okay. So for the employer, it's a real disincentive to try to skirt the law or discriminate based on gender.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Now, when it comes to the way employers decide to pay women less based on a number of factors, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this as we go throughout the program here. Mm-hmm. But right now, again, as Beth said, anything other than gender is the categorical description of
Correct.
How it's like, which is extremely wide.
Right.
It allows for a lot of subjectivity.
Correct.
If we narrow that, is there still a lot of subjectivity? Is it still hard to prove?
You know, there is still a lot of room, you know, for employers to put forth a legitimate business justification, but it does press them to actually do it instead of just pointing to anything, because as it stands now, it's almost impossible to win on those claims. I would also point out that currently, under New York's executive law, also referred to as the human rights law, we're one of just 9 states where you can't recover attorney's fees for bringing these cases, you know, right there with Mississippi and Alabama and these sorts of states. For sex discrimination claims now, and it's just for that category, you can recover your attorney's fees. So that's also a huge change that'll also make, you know, the plaintiff's bar more willing to take up and prosecute these cases, because not only can you get the increased damages, you can get your fees.
You get your fees if you are someone who you think has suffered discrimination. You're more likely to want to press it if you feel like you get that back, right?
Right. I mean, as it stands now, it's, you know, damages are almost usually limited, and you can't get your fees. It makes it very unattractive. So if these plaintiffs want to pursue it at all, they're left on their own. And, they, you know, for many, many times they fail for that reason.
We're talking to Beth Cordello, the chair of the Employment Practice Group at Polano & Farrell Law Firm in Rochester. And on the line with us is Tracy Brooks, the president of Family Planning Advocates, as we try to look at the entire scope of the Women's Equality Act as it moves through the legislature, and we might see some action on some or all of it. Sexual harassment in the workplace, what could change here, Beth?
Well, a big thing has changed here. New York's executive law currently provides that you have to have at least 4 employees to be protected for sexual harassment purposes. And unbeknownst to me, but I was just reading that over 60% of New York's employers employ less than 4 employees. So, and under federal law, you need at least 12 employees. So over half the working women in the state, you know, can't bring a sexual harassment claim simply because there aren't enough employees. The new law would eliminate that. any number from one employee up.
Why would there be a minimum employee number?
Of four employees?
Yeah. What was that? Any idea why that was created?
No idea why that was created. Probably pressure from the business community saying, you know, if you're smaller than that, you can't, I guess, afford to prohibit sexual harassment. I'm not sure what the thought was.
Okay.
But that'll be eliminated if this passes.
So again, when we ask whether there is actual force in these legislation or if they're just symbolic, so far, a lot of real force behind these changes.
Yeah, these are the biggest changes I've seen in my almost 15 years of practice.
All right, quick question from Mark on Twitter wants to know if Tracy thinks the Assembly is serious about getting involved in the women's equality agenda and protecting that 10th point. So Tracy, jump in there with that.
Yeah, I do. I mean, the Assembly has always protected the 10th plank as it only passed the omnibus bill for the first 2 years of the legislation, you know, holding steady and tight to the fact that we needed all of the provisions. We're very excited that Assemblywoman Glick introduced the bill this week, and, you know, it's only March. We have plenty of time to move this piece of legislation through. And we do feel very confident. We've heard from the new speaker that there will continue to be the commitment to reproductive health care under his leadership, as there was under Speaker Silver's leadership.
Tracy, to follow up on Mark's question, what happens with your relationship and with so many folks who have been advocating for all planks in the WEA? What happens to your relationship with the Assembly if the Assembly ended up kind of getting on the Senate's plan of passing 9 of 10?
If the Assembly fails to pass the reproductive health portion, it would be rather disconcerting, and I think also out of step with where the chamber lies, with the conference as well. So I don't anticipate that in any way. It would be rather disappointing, and certainly there would have to be great discussion if that were to happen. We do not anticipate that happening this year.
Okay. 844-295-TALK, if you want to jump in with a question, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Beth Cordello, another plank is to end family status discrimination. What does that mean?
Well, that means, and this applies to both sexes, any parent can't be discriminated against in employment on the basis of whether or not they have children. Marital status is already protected. This adds the additional, and this affects, you know, most would say this affects women more so than men.
Yeah.
Not only because they're oftentimes the primary caregivers, they're perceived as the primary caregivers, whether or not they are. And oftentimes when considering people for promotion or higher, there's the perception that you're less committed or less able if you have children.
I spoke to somebody recently, and they had the question, I should say, they asked me, and I should have directed them to someone like Beth. They were asked by a potential employer if they planned to start a family. Is
Wow.
that a question that can be asked?
You know, currently, yes. Currently, yes. I would strongly discourage that. You currently can't ask if someone's married or if they plan to get married. But currently, you could ask. To me, there could be a potential pregnancy discrimination claim there if it's a female, or a sex discrimination claim there if that was a female. But currently, yes, you can ask. Generally, you can ask if whether or not someone plans to have children, if they have children, and this law would eliminate that.
Correct. Okay. Now, I think people will be surprised to hear that you still can ask that question.
Yes.
And almost all of these cases do target women, not men. Let's be
right.
honest about that.
Right.
But do you, if someone comes to you with that issue, with the law currently as it is, before the WEA passes, if it passes, how do you tell people to deal with that?
Well, and similarly, you know, people ask, what are your child care arrangements? You know, are you going to have to run out of here,
right.
get to the daycare, et cetera? You know, as far as business clients go, I, for the reasons I just said, I strongly discourage it, because even though it's not explicitly prohibited by law, I think that there are claims to be made there, and it's not a justifiable business reason to deny somebody employment. So it's not a good practice. It's not valid, and it could, you know, expose you to liability.
And now for some of the other side, let me get a couple of questions on both reproductive rights and on the workplace from John, who writes and says, I'm a small business owner. First of all, can we not talk about abortion anymore? New York State has the highest rate in the country, and no abortion law is going to change that. Tracy?
New York State has excellent access to health care. That is, that's for sure, across the board. So what we do need to do is ensure that access continues to, that women continue to have access to the full range of comprehensive reproductive health care, regardless of what happens on the federal level.
And he follows up by basically saying, family status affects me. I don't have many employees. I should be able to know what someone's child care schedule might be. Beth?
Well, that is very factually dependent. If somebody's child care schedule affects the essential functions of their job, then yes, that is a conversation that needs to be had. But should that just be an inquiry you throw out there at the time of hire, or just generally if somebody's doing their job and they're there when they need to be there, I don't know that their child care arrangements are necessarily your business.
All right. If you're waiting on the phone, we're going to get to phone calls in just a moment here. But let me hit one more here. They want to remove barriers to remedying discrimination as well. We've kind of talked a little bit about that, but this act would make it easier to do what, Beth? When it comes to remedying discrimination, the legislation, it says, would allow successful plaintiffs to recover attorney fees in employment or credit discrimination cases based on sex. Any real change there?
Yes. As I was saying before, in housing and credit, women can recover attorney's fees, but employment's always been carved out of that, and now employment will be included in that. So you can recover attorney's fees, and you can recover up to triple damages of what the actual damages are. And, those, while they may seem to some to be minor, those are significant changes. I think you'll see an uptick in claims and lawsuits if this passes.
Okay, different John in the city on the line with us. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Yeah, I've got a couple questions, a couple points, I guess. On the issue of women's equality in pay, I think this law could encourage lawsuits, especially the small business. And one of the reasons small business, we can't afford a lot of these types of flagrant lawsuits that sometimes are generated. Most businesses that I know, small businesses, and large businesses for that matter, have good practices regarding women's rights. I think one of the issues is some of the statistics are flawed when they say women are that far out of the range of what men make, and I think a lot has to do with the physiological differences. Women, I know from experience, a lot of women that I've employed over the years don't have the incentive to work a job outside the home because they've got plenty of work to do when they raise a family, et cetera, and their interests aren't, I've seen over the years that men have more incentives outside the home, and women don't. And I think it's a physiological difference. They have different needs, et cetera. And I think that, in a lot of ways, makes some of the statistics flawed. Now, on abortion, I read part of the law, and I've gotten some information from one of the Catholic organizations, and they say that the abortion part of the law will eliminate the language of a duly licensed physician who will perform the abortion, and will open it up to non-licensed physicians, and that's a concern that I have also. And also, they mention that. I've looked at the law and I've heard what the Catholic organization has said, and they say that, and from what I see in the law, it will open up to increase the amount of abortions that are done due to the definition of non-viable unborn babies will be expanded, which will encompass not only from a time frame, but I think more than 24 weeks, and also for any other emotional and non-physical diseases.
Okay, John, I think what you're trying to say is your concern is the law would allow doctors to have more discretion to carry out abortions later in the term.
Later in the term, and for many more reasons, such as emotional trauma, lifestyle, age, etc. So I think those are the concerns I have. I'd like to have your panel address those.
John, thanks for the call. I'm going to start with Tracy. We'll work backwards there.
Sure.
Tracy, go ahead.
I just want to assure John that there's nothing in this piece of legislation that changes what the current status is of women being able to access abortion after 24 weeks if her health is in danger. Roe versus Wade was very clear on what could be considered. That has not changed. There is no expansion at this point. It's just clearly putting the health exception that's required by Roe versus Wade in the state of New York. There's no change. All of that doctors can already consider when working with a woman and providing all of her medical options when, in fact, her health is in jeopardy. And then with regard to eliminating who can or changing who can actually perform abortion, that can only be done by the state education department, the licensing boards who set scope of practice. This legislation has no wording whatsoever that applies to who, when, or how an abortion can be performed. That's already determined by the licensing boards. And the one last piece, I'm sorry, just lost my train of thought. There was something I wanted to go back to with regard to the health exception.
Well, Tracy, let me follow up, because I've heard similar points or similar questions that John raised.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you're saying that there is no way doctors are going to perform more late-term abortions based on this legislation.
We already have this in the law today.
Right.
It's just putting it in the state law clearly.
Yeah, the concern that I hear is people saying, well, this will allow doctors to say this person is mentally distressed, even if it's not life-threatening. There's more of a mental exemption, an ability to care.
Absolutely no difference.
Okay.
Roe versus Wade allows for a woman's mental health to be considered. And in New York State, half a decade ago, we passed a law here that says mental health is on parity with physical health, that there is no difference between your mental health and your physical health. We view them equally the same in severity. So there's nothing that the Women's Equality Act does to change or broaden those parameters. That's what the law of the United States is already.
And I think to John's question here, before I kick it over to Beth to respond to his questions on workplace issues, to John's point, if the Women's Equality Agenda passes, we have the opportunity to actually watch it in practice. And if we saw a sort of a great expansion of late-term abortion, which, again, we know from surveys and stats and polls over the years, most Americans don't want third trimester abortion unless it is for, as we've been talking about, for life-saving or really extreme circumstances. But if we saw that, Tracy, I think we would have to readdress it. But what you're saying is we're not going to see it.
No, I mean, this is already legal in the state of New York, and the majority of abortions, you know, in the high 90% are performed in the first 21 weeks. These are what we're talking about with the health exception or the life exception that's also already in the state law, is we're talking about families with very wanted pregnancies. You know, you're talking about people who are finding devastating situations, and in the course of receiving prenatal care, a health or life issue has come up that is endangering mom and or pregnancy. And so this is just talking about a very small percentage of pregnancies wherein allowing families to contemplate the full range of medical options in determining how to move forward.
All right, Beth, on his questions about employment situations, he thinks most small businesses treat women very well. I think he's probably right. That's a good thing.
I would agree.
That doesn't mean that everyone is in that category, unfortunately. So I'm trying to remember back to his comments, but I'll let you kind of jump in, and then what did you make of John's concerns?
Sure, yeah, he brought up quite a lot, so I'll try to address it all. You know, as for, pay disparity, is it real, is it not real? You know, the so-called gender wage gap, you know, what those numbers are depend on things such as the industry we're talking about. There are certain industries where men and women certainly make about the same, and there's others where there is a big difference. The race of the woman is also a factor we see in how wide that gender wage gap is. and so forth. But, you know, it does exist. We may, you know, argue as to what that number exactly is, and there's a lot of factors that go into it. New York has a smaller gap than other states. You know, on average across the country, it's, I believe, 77 cents on the dollar, whereas here in New York, it's 84 cents on the dollar. You know, as for whether women physiologically can match a man in a given occupation, you know, it really depends. You know, I would tell employers to look at what the essential functions of the job are and hire candidates who can fulfill those functions. Certainly, some women are physiologically more capable or strong than certain men and vice versa.
I think, though, what he may be saying is that if we look at the genders on a whole, that men are more driven to succeed at work and make more money, and women are more driven to balance. That seemed to be what John is saying. And I don't want to speak for John, but he seems to be saying, naturally, women may not be as ambitious to make more money because they're smart enough to live balanced lives, and men are sort of monolithically obsessed with promotions and money.
Right.
Again, I'm trying to interpret what he's trying to say. Is there any validity to that?
Well, I think that viewpoint is what's driving the importance of these laws because when you look at it's not valid based on the information we have. Over half the households we have, women are either the primary breadwinner or an equal breadwinner. The days of where the male is out at work and the woman stays home, that's not as prevalent as it used to be. Most households are double income, or there are single moms where they're the primary breadwinners for their children. And so, you know, that attitude may hold back women. I don't know any women personally that work just for fun. Usually there's a need for it, and their families or, you know, their households depend on it. So I would say that that's not true, generally.
My interpretation, and this show is not about the host's interpretation, but as best I can tell, even if there is an overall gender difference that you were able to quantify, and I don't think you'll ever be able to do it, that says men are more off balance and driven to get promoted and make more money, and women are smart enough to be a little more balanced. Even if that is true, I don't know if you think you can quantify it. And I think if you start accepting that across the board, then you start accepting real discrimination.
Right. Well, and that's also, even if that were true, that men are, you know, more driven and ambitious and primary breadwinners, and women are just there, you know, for whatever reason, that still doesn't justify a difference in pay.
Same work. Absolutely.
You should get equal pay regardless of why you're there.
I think that's well said. We're way overdue for a break. We're going back to the phones. Keith, your next 60-second break and much more as we look at the Women's Equality Agenda on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Resetting the conversation for you, there have been some conflicting reports about the fate and future of the Women's Equality Agenda. It's 10 planks. The Cuomo administration rolled it out about 2 years ago in an effort to curb workplace discrimination against women on a number of fronts, to address human trafficking, and the 10th plank, to protect and codify Roe v. Wade in this state in the wake of more than 20 other states restricting access in many cases to abortion. That has been the place of stalemate. And this week we had heard reports that the New York State Assembly would sort of follow the path of the Senate, to vote on the points individually, knowing that they wouldn't pass the 10th plank, but getting the other nine through. But now we're hearing some conflicting information on that. So we're trying to follow that as best we can. We invited Senator Rich Funke on the program. He's a Republican who campaigned on passing 9 of the 10 and had claimed that the pro-abortion side was holding the entire agenda hijacked. Because they wanted to expand abortion. And again, you've been hearing this hour from Tracy Brooks, the president of the Family Planning Advocate, saying that that is incorrect, that this was about protecting where reproductive rights currently are, again, in the wake of restriction across the country. Beth Cordello is also here. She's the chair of the Employment Practice Group at Polano Farrow Law Firm in Rochester. And unfortunately, Senator Funke could not join us today. Sifting through your comments on Twitter, Claudia writes to us and says, let me get back to this. Claudia says, listening to Evan Dawson right now, is this caller serious? I don't have incentive to work outside the home because I'm a woman. Wow, she says. But again, I think we tried to address what the legislation would do about that. And Keith wants to jump in with a question as well. Go ahead, Keith.
Yeah, your Twitter feed was exactly what I was thinking. The only thing I could think of was knuckle dragging. I mean, the comments were like incredible. Obviously, he doesn't have daughters. But when it comes to hiring a female employee to say work on the same level of a male, you got to pay them both the same for the same job. But let's say one's education level came from an Ivy League school and one came from a state school. Could you use that to determine, pay?
Absolutely, and that's a great example. The fact of the matter is, if you want an Ivy League graduate, oftentimes you have to pay more to be able to get them because they're more in demand. And so, you know, if you have a male that's a graduate of an Ivy League school and a female that's a graduate of a state school, you know, an employer could use that as a justification for making a higher offer to that individual.
But would the reverse hold true? Let's say you have the woman from the Ivy League school and the guy graduated from the state school, and they both make the same. Could the woman say, hey, I'm being discriminated, I got a better education, or I have a more prestigious document than this guy?
I would say a great true. Question, and some creative attorney might try to make that argument, but I would say that fails because you are not paying a differential based on sex. She cannot establish that.
No, he would have to establish it. The guy would have to say that, I see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I should also point out that that this is available to men as well. If it's a work environment where females are making a certain amount and he feels like he's making lesser because of his gender, he can also bring forward a claim. This isn't just for women.
No. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. Jess writes, maybe I live a sheltered life, but do we need human trafficking laws in 2015 in this state? I can understand the need in other countries.
We do need them. As I said, there are 15,000 victims annually that are brought to the United States each year. And because New York State, you know, has borders and ports that are open internationally, many of those victims are trafficked through New York State and actually work in New York State.
Beth Cordello, I'm back on the Women's Equality Agenda individual prongs. We've talked about whether potential employers could ask, do you plan to start a family? You know, those kind of questions that would apparently be limited or eliminated
mm-hmm.
with
yes.
this. But pregnancy discrimination can also, at least it seems to me, encompass workplace accommodation.
Yes.
And this act tries to address that?
The new law would require that employers provide reasonable accommodations to pregnant workers as they're already required to do for employees with disabilities. As it stands right now, that is not laid out in the executive law. It is in the regulations. It is how the Division of Human Rights, which is the state agency that enforces these laws, interprets the pregnancy discrimination provision. But right now, both federally and at a state level, courts are all over the place as to whether employers must give reasonable accommodations to pregnant employees. And this would make it explicit in the law that in New York State, yes, you do.
Okay. Tracy, before I let you go, let me just ask one more question about where things are going with reproductive rights in this state. And earlier this month, we had a panel of pro-life feminists on the program, mm-hmm. and they indicated their concern about the current practice of abortion. And I said, look, if we saw restriction or elimination of abortion in terms of legally, we almost certainly would still see it performed in much more secret, covert, and potentially dangerous ways and places, right? They didn't disagree with that, but they said it would be no less dangerous than it is now because the practice itself they view as dangerous or destructive. Can you address?
Can you address that?
Yeah,
I can speak to that because the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the national CDC, has shown that abortion is over 99% safety record. It's one of the safest procedures that a woman actually can access, and that certainly is. And the number, I mean, the numbers are exponential from what we saw, pre 1970 in the United States, of how many women were dying from abortion or abortion-related complications versus what numbers look like today. Abortion is safer than childbirth, and at this point, we're talking about a procedure that has been needed in our country and in our state. Just sometimes pregnant women need access to abortion for any number of reasons that are certainly beyond any one of our, it's not ours to decide, but certainly having health care available to women that is constitutional and has been determined by the Supreme Court as legal in our country, we want to continue to see our laws in the state of New York providing access to women of all socioeconomic backgrounds, all regions of our state, and making sure that we keep a safe environment, because making it illegal changes that safety outcome from 99% safety record to going back to what we had pre-1970, where women and families saw, significant deaths and sterilization and maiming of women who were accessing abortions.
Okay, and then lastly, Tracy, we do see statistics that show unplanned pregnancies are I don't want to say overwhelmingly, but the numbers show that people of lower socioeconomic status end up with more unplanned pregnancy, and that many ways to address that around the world, not just here but around the world, start with comprehensive education, access to contraception, et cetera. But our guests earlier this month said in Rochester, you have, what they described as a pretty high rate of abortion among people of lower socioeconomic status, but you still have highly concentrated poverty. And they are contending that that indicates that the access to what we would call safe abortion is not alleviating harsh economic circumstances.
Well, certainly, that's a whole different spin on it. Certainly, abortion isn't the only abortion is the underpinning of women's socioeconomic equality. I would certainly make that connection there, which is why you see the women's equality agenda having so many other aspects that really get at poverty and get at socioeconomic status, the ability of women to be able to access good-paying jobs, stay in them as they create their families, be able to count on their paychecks for their whole pregnancy, be able to be paid what they are worth, not lose their jobs or their housing because they're victims of domestic violence, and there are a number of pieces we actually didn't get to touch on today. That's why it was so groundbreaking for the governor of the state of New York to bring this comprehensive package forward, which we have now seen introduced at the federal level and at states across the country. New York State pioneered once again a way of looking at how do we bring economic justice into our state and make our laws keep pace with women's participation. The unfortunate part around unintended pregnancy is, yes, the number is still above 50% across all socioeconomic levels, and really education and access to comprehensive birth control, including the long-acting reversible methods where human error becomes less, you know, is really what is going to reduce poverty, abortion levels, and unintended pregnancy. And, you know, together with the providers that I represent, the family planning health providers, including Planned Parenthood in New York State, you know, having access to IUDs and implants through sliding fee scales, robust Medicaid programs, and private health insurance really allow women to have great control up to 10 years without having to change their birth control method. And we continue to try to get that word out, education, and we're seeing a great increase of women using those longer methods.
And Tracy, I've got about 30 seconds. You would probably hear Rich Funke, the senator who couldn't join us today, say that even if the assembly, even if you're right and the assembly doesn't pass the WEA point by point, even if they pass the reproductive right codification, you would not see the Senate do it. And that would, again, hold up the passage of the other points we've been talking about today. And Rich Funke may say that you're making a bad choice by doing that. 30 seconds.
I think that Rich Funke misunderstood then what's going on, because what we've seen is that the Assembly is starting to move the individual provisions, including the abortion provision, by seeing that introduction. And so nothing will be held up in the Assembly, including the abortion provision, moving forward. And then what's left is the Senate holding up that last piece that we've all just talked about, and you've identified that the Feminists for Life have identified that reproductive access to reproductive health care is part of the underpinnings of economic justice in the state of New York, and it would be, unfortunately, the Senate. It's difficult that Senator Funke really just doesn't like abortion. He would really like it to just be illegal. That's not the law of the United States. It's unfortunate that we have a representative who doesn't support the United States laws or policies representing the women of that area, and they won't, unfortunately, be able to get a positive vote from him.
Tracy Brooks, president of Family Planning Advocates, thanks for taking the time today.
I appreciate being on. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, we'll certainly follow that. Beth Cordello, last word from you. Again, as we muddle, trying to get through the muddle of where things are, it does look like there's a good chance that nine of the planks will pass. And best I can tell from you, I know we're not talking anymore about that 10th plank, that there will be a strengthening of protection for women in the workplace if this happens.
Absolutely, and businesses should take note.
Okay, so businesses should take note, but if we're all educated, we're probably better able to handle these situations. Fair enough?
Fair enough, absolutely.
Beth Cordello is the chair of the Employment Practice Group at Polano & Farrow. It's a law firm in Rochester. Always appreciate your expertise, and thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thanks for all the great calls and comments this hour as we do our best to follow this legislation on its way through this session. I'm Evan Dawson. Val, thanks for hanging in there this hour. Have a wonderful sunny Thursday afternoon, and it's Healthy Friday tomorrow, but I'll talk to you on a Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.